If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth in for Steve Bertrand here today on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for spending part of your day with me. I am most grateful to you for that. We have a big show today, lots of things lined up for you, so let's dive on in. We're joined right now by our good friends, regular contributors to this program from Chicago Innovation. We call them the Chicago Inno guys, Jim Dahlke and Will Flanagan. Welcome back to the show, gentlemen.
Cool. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Always nice to see you, and always good to catch up on all the business headlines going around our fine city. You know, the one I would like to start with today is talking about, this phenomenon of Uber for blank.
Yeah.
That's such a thing, and people describe so many apps that way as Uber for pets or Uber for real estate or Uber for tire changing, all these things that people say, Uber for groceries. But the one that that you have highlighted recently is Uber for haircuts, which I'm not sure... I don't know, that strikes a little bit of fear. Tell me about that one.
Yeah, it's a little different, right? I mean, the on-demand app craze is underway and is as strong as ever. It seems like, there, like you said, there's an Uber for everything. And this startup, Bo, based here in Chicago, is Uber for haircuts. And it's Uber for haircuts for dudes. So it's just for guys. $28 is the price. Just like hailing an Uber, you hail a Bo stylist who comes to your door when you schedule it on the app. The payment takes place in the app. $28. They come in, preferably not on your carpet somewhere with some linoleum or hardwood. Get a little haircut in your house, and you are done. It's a really interesting idea, especially when they're going only after guys. I think the competition is a little more fierce for the in-home styling for women, so they're going really after the male segment. And at $28, it's more than your Great Clips and your Supercuts, kind of comparable to that salon, or maybe even a little less.
What's funny is how all of these Uber for X startups kind of sell you on the convenience factor when I really didn't know this was inconvenient to begin with.
Right.
See, that's the thing. They solve problems. They make things inconvenient that weren't necessarily that inconvenient.
Oh, man, remember what a pain it was going to get your hair cut? I was like, yeah, I guess it is. I had never thought of that as an inconvenience. And that's, what's next? There's going to be, the Uber for shoe tying. So remember when tying your shoes was a pain?
I would think that there would now be a demand for Uber for cleanup because you need to have someone sweep up all the hair that just happened in your house.
Those exist. We got Homejoy was kind of one of the first Uber for X startups that came and crashed real fast. And there's a ton
of like TaskRabbit.
Exactly. There's an Uber for everything.
Yeah. Well, the idea when you talk to the founders is that they say, this is just another app for your on-demand sharing economy tool belt. I mean, if you're doing Postmates for food, if you're doing Uber, if you're doing Airbnb to sleep in someone else's house, why not have someone come to your house and give you a haircut?
Right. Why not? Easy enough. Again, we are creating inconveniences out of things that are not that inconvenient, shifting our perspective radically. Another thing that recently was up at Chicago Innovation was all about this thing that is everywhere, and that is the Pokemon Go that everybody's talking about. Here is my thing. Suddenly it just was. Suddenly it was just there upon us and everywhere. Who knew about it first? Where did that even come from? It really felt like it just came out of nowhere.
It did. I mean, and that's kind of what's cool about tech, is that these things, these overnight successes, things get billed as overnight successes, whether it's like a band or this new TV show. But those things have big marketing campaigns, have been playing, shows for probably months and years to drum up this like base interest. Whereas this is a legit overnight success. People were aware that it was coming, that Pokemon has a real loyal following. So there was a lot of excitement. There was a meetup group actually created in Chicago about a week before Pokemon Go launched. So there was that group of people who were very excited about it. It launched, and I think the reason why it became number one in the App Store so quickly is because it's new. It's not just a Words with Friends or a Candy Crush, a game that catches everybody's attention and everyone's talking about. The reason why I think this has staying power is because it's new technology. It brings augmented reality and popularizes it. And what AR is, it's basically, it overlays digital imaging into the real world. So when you play Pokemon Go, you're outside, you're walking around, you hold up your phone, and you see a Pokemon creature right in front of you, whether that's, you know, on your office desk or outside by the bean. And then that's really neat. It's silly, like, oh my god, Pokemon's so popular. But at the end of the day, it's kind of cool technology, and I think that's what's driving it.
Yeah, using your phone's GPS and camera to kind of, you know, bring augmented reality to the masses. This is the first time that I think augmented reality has really gone this mainstream. And really, you know, if you haven't seen Pokemon Go or heard about it, you're going to definitely hear about it soon. That's why more people are probably got their head in their phones as they're walking down the sidewalk, if there weren't already that many people doing that previously. But it's fascinating to see, like Will said, it went to the top of the App Store. A company that does sort of analysis on this found that 5% of Android phones have already downloaded this. It's already more popular than Tinder. It's getting almost as popular as Twitter on people's phones. And it boosted Nintendo's stock by 25% or something.
It's over $7 billion.
Yeah. So overnight success for this app. Is it going to have the staying power? Is it going to fizzle out like some apps we've seen in the past? Who knows? But right now it looks like it's just totally on fire.
Yeah, and the game part is one thing, but like you, I'm excited about the technology.
Yeah.
Because when I first I found somebody who was using it and had her explain it to me, and I was like, talk me through this. Mm-hmm. What is going on? And the first thing I thought of, I was like, I don't really care about collecting little Pokemon and handing them toys and whatever. But to me, right away, I thought, there's a fitness application for this, because people are out walking around a lot more. Suddenly they're collecting this. I was like, there's got to be some way to very purposefully have people going out and kind of gamifying fitness in that way. But there's a downside to all this. And that is we're starting to see injuries from this, because people have their heads in their phones more. People are walking off curbs and into potholes. People are even getting robbed, because you know where the Pokemon is, and you know someone's going to be looking at their phone with their phone out, not in a very, offensive way.
you can look at the map and you can see this person is in a dark, quiet area by themselves, and they have a smartphone. So, having a tool that can point you towards individuals like that is not a great thing, but it's something that they're working through. I mean, Nintendo, which has done overnight successes before, was totally surprised by this. On Friday, when we were testing the app, the server was constantly crashing. They were not prepared for this demand. So there are things like, when we've tested it out, I turned my phone to catch one, and guess what? It was in the street. So there are things that they have to work through to make sure that those things. Are we always going to hear stories of people walking into windows? Yeah, and I hope so. But making it safer is something I imagine they're thinking and working on right now.
We have three lovely windows right here in the Allstate Showcase Studio, so maybe we'll see people catching Pokemon walking into our windows right here. We're talking with Jim Dalkey and Will Flanagan from Chicago Innovation. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, in for Steve Bertrand. Pleasure to be with you today. Thanks for spending the time with me and giving me part of your Monday. My friends, still lots to talk about here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, and we're hanging out with our friends from Chicago Inno, Jim Dalkey and Will Flanagan, regular contributors to the program. Lots of good stuff happening with them, and they always bring us some wonderful stories to talk about and think about and read and share and all those good things. So there is an event coming up, two events coming up, actually, that I would love to talk with you about next, guys. And one of them is a Miller Lite startup competition that's involving some people from Shark Tank, and sounds really, really interesting and like a good opportunity for Chicago entrepreneurs. Will you tell us about that?
Yeah, totally. So Miller Lite is doing its Tap the Future competition. It's been doing it for 4 years now. They kind of travel the country and hold these little pitch showcases in different cities across the U.S., and they bring one of the Shark Tank judges, Damon John, and he will be kind of judging these competitions, and it's stopping in Chicago in August. And the thing I kind of like about this competition is that, first of all, they found mid-most startups that we've never heard of before, which is always great to see new companies, and they're doing lots of really different things. One of the startups in the competition, EduSafe, is a company that does it's a subscription service that you pay for, and if you fail to make your payment for your student loans, or you can't pay up your loan that month, they'll pay it for you. So it's like an insurance service for student loans. So yeah, super interesting. Another company actually out of Cincinnati called Solar Screen is doing sunscreen misting kiosks outside of beaches. Who knew you needed a sunscreen misting kiosk? But basically, they're disrupting sunscreen or sunburns, sure. Maybe. Who knows? And then another one that I found really interesting was Firestrike out of Elgin, Illinois. And they've created a product called the Phoenix, which is an autonomous fire extinguisher. It's got some smoke detection and fire detection technology, so they can pinpoint exactly where the fire is in a home. And it's basically a smart fire extinguisher. So really cool stuff. A lot of different kinds of companies. And that'll be in August that Miller Lite's doing.
Excellent. Yeah, it's a really cool campaign by Miller Lite, and you're seeing Anheuser-Busch just partnered with Techstars, which is one of the big, startup incubators in the country. And you're seeing these brands trying to align with these really innovative companies and organizations, because every brand wants to be seen as innovative, and this is kind of a cool way they're tackling that.
For sure, for sure. And then there's another event coming up, and that is one that you guys are doing. That's called Talent Inno. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so Talent Inno, what we wanted to put it on because, you know, when we talk to tech companies and startups, I mean, everybody has their own unique set of problems, but there's one problem that everybody shares right now, and that's finding tech talent. Mm-hmm. It's not unique to Chicago. Everyone is struggling with that, but it's hard here, right? If you're not Silicon Valley, and even if you are in New York, Boston, finding really good engineers is tricky. And once you find them, you know that everyone around you is looking for them as well. So fostering and retaining is important as well. So there's a lot of experts here in the city that are working on that. We're going to be talking with several heads of HR with some of the fastest growing tech companies here in the city. We're also going to be speaking with entrepreneurs who are working on kind of like employee engagement software and tackling this issue of how do you find and attract and retain talent in interesting ways. One of them actually is a company called Peanut Butter, which is kind of hitting that student loan problem as well. They help companies add student loan repayment as a benefit, with the idea being if you have this as a benefit, it will help you attract millennials, because this is a problem that millennials mm-hmm. are facing. So, companies doing really interesting things to help you find the best talent. So that is this Thursday. Check it out. Learn more on chicagoinno.com. We'd love to see you.
Great, great. So everybody head there. And, of course, people can find you on social media and all that good stuff and connect with you about all of the stories we've talked about today and then some. All right, my friends, we are going to take a little break here in a bit. But thank you to my guests, Jim Dahlke and Will Flanagan from Chicago Inno. Always a pleasure to see you guys. All right, we'll take a break and then we'll get you news. And when we come back, more fun on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Lots to talk about still. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth in for Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us today and sharing part of your Monday. I'm most grateful to you. Hope you're able to duck outside and get a little bit of that warm weather while we got it. As we heard from our friend Kim Gordon, there may be some storms a little bit later, but we will keep you updated on that. All right, my friends, still lots to do here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We're joined now by our good friend Andy Smith from the Mutual Fund Store to tell us all about, to talk all about mutual funds, because right now is a perfect time to do that, because we're kind of going out of the second quarter, going into the third quarter. So it's a time for us to look at what is happening with our numbers. Welcome to the program, Andy.
Thanks, Amy, for having me.
Glad to have you. Thanks for joining us and taking the time to chat with us. So as we kind of change quarters right now and do all of that kind of stuff, can you kind of give us a quick recap of what we saw from the markets in the last couple of months?
Sure thing. So, there's a lot going on, right? So there's a ton of market uncertainty. There's a lot of political and geopolitical uncertainty with the vote overseas, with Britain leaving the European Union, with all of the stuff that we see here with the election cycle. So, I mean, you name it, there's a number of things that people can, choose to get wired up about and to worry about when it comes to their investments. The market was mostly flat up until the vote to get the UK out of the European Union. Markets, I think, are still trying to gauge what's going to happen with the November election. So the unfortunate thing is that investors don't like uncertainty, and there's a ton of it out there, both with the markets and the election. So one of the things that we're talking about with people as we meet with clients here over the next couple of weeks is just go back to the basics, remember the things that you're supposed to be doing, and try not to let your emotions get you too wound up, especially when it comes to your long-term money.
Yeah, definitely. And is this something that we usually see in an election year? I mean, is there a pattern that we can kind of look back on historically of what the markets do during an election cycle?
I mean, I think that the thing that people don't realize is that we see all this drama and we think that, oh my gosh, this drama has never been like this before. It's the worst that it's ever been. A friend of mine handed me this ad bill when Thomas Jefferson and John Adams were running against each other like hundreds of years ago. And things were just as dramatic. Things were just as uncertain and just as kind of almost cataclysmic as they are historically. The end of every four-year cycle, regardless of who is in the market, things generally trend up. And that's the thing that people have a hard time kind of unwinding themselves to remember when it comes to looking at their IRAs and 401ks. They're so wound up with one political party or one particular set of beliefs that they just have a hard time thinking and remembering that markets historically do tend to go up.
Yeah, definitely. Well, so as this we step into the start of this new quarter, a lot of people are getting their quarterly statements for their retirement accounts. So what things can we expect to see in those? Because I think some people just sort of shove them in a drawer and don't look at them, and some people really scrutinize them. But what are some things kind of meet in the middle for the people that necessarily don't look at them, things to look for, and things for the scrutinizers to kind of be ready for and ready to see?
Yeah, great question. I like people to do three things. Number one, I want you to look at how much you're saving. Nothing else is going to work in your investment plan if you don't save as much as you can for as long as you can. So that's the first thing that I go over, all of my advisors go over. The second thing that we look at is just your actual investments. So yes, you might have 5, 6, 7 different funds or ETFs in your 401k or IRA, but you may have access to a lot more. And so I want people to open the statements. I want people to, you know, dig out the logon or the login IDs and the passwords, figure out how to get back into your 401k, because you got to figure out what all you have access to. And then, you know, see what your allocation is. Allocation is just a fancy word for how much you have in stocks and bonds and cash. So unless you've had a major life change, birth, marriage, illness, or death, unless you have a major cash need in the next 30 to 60 days, we're not changing anything on our side. All of our advisors all over the metro area, they're not changing anything on their side. You just have to remember, markets go through these cycles. There's always going to be that uncertainty. You got to focus on the long term when it comes to your saving, your investments, and especially how you put all those dollars together within your IRA.
Definitely. And you mentioned life changes. When should people be making changes to their accounts, and what should they be doing?
Like I said, birth, marriage, illness, or death. I mean, if you have a new child, if you're getting married, kind of joining two sets of finances together, if you're trying to plan for a long-term illness or trying to deal with ailing parents, or if you're dealing with an estate planning situation, these are times when you want to go back to the advisor or get an advisor if you don't have one. I mean, this is a lot of the things that our advisors in Orland and Oakbrook and Northbrook, they talk about, because people have these huge events, birth, marriage, illness, death, and they need somebody to kind of put their arms around them and take them through the things that they got to think about so that they don't let emotion get in the way, so that they're not making huge changes that they don't need to be making right now.
Well, you mentioned emotion. I think that's such an interesting part of money that's so often overlooked, right? I think sometimes people feel very overwhelmed, or they have fear they don't necessarily want to name or admit to or something like that. And so they end up just kind of resisting. And that's where we see people shoving those statements in the drawer or losing the log on and things like that. What advice do you have for someone in that position who's just kind of stuck because they feel kind of overwhelmed with the whole, you know, the whole process? And it just seems kind of daunting to them. What would you say to that?
Good question. Take baby steps. I mean, don't necessarily log into the account and do a ton of things all at once. Step one, open the statement. Step two, get online, figure out what you have access to. Working with somebody who you know is not going to take advantage of you has such huge worth and merit to you, because, you know, if you're talking to somebody and you know that they're not trying to sell you something, and they're not trying to, you know, do what's better for them or their company than for you, that removes a lot of the emotion. And so that's what it means to work with a fiduciary. So I would say, you know, baby steps, open the statements, start talking to people, and just interview a lot of people and just say, look, I'm kind of in a bind right now. I feel a lot of stress and anxiety about doing this, that, or the other. And then if you're working with the right person, they're going to be able to take you through that process, figure out how much you're saving, look at the investments, and build you a long-term plan that is absolutely not going to blow up your retirement. That's what you got to be looking for right now.
Andy, if our listeners want help with this, with their investments or their long-term financial picture, who should they reach out to?
We have advisors all over the metro area, and like I said, in Orland Park, Oak Brook, Northbrook. Just give them a call, 847-498-3636. These guys are, you know, fiduciaries. They are going to do what is in your best interest. But just start, and the rest is going to be easy.
There it is. A journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step.
Absolutely.
As they say, right? All right. Andy Smith from the Mutual Fund Store, thanks so much for spending time with us today and breaking it all down.
Amy, thank you. Have a great week.
Thanks, you too. All right, my friends, we are going to take a little break here in just a bit and check in with the markets and traffic and all that good stuff here in just a bit on 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth in for Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for joining us today and spending part of your Monday with us. We are most grateful to you for that. Still lots to do here on the show. We turn now to a very interesting new process and product. And that is, looks like we just lost our guest. We had our guest on the phone, but we'll get her back in a moment. We were about to talk with, we'll get her back here in just a second, Dr. Stacia Pierce, who you know from the Own Oprah Network contest. She is a life coach for women, and she has created a really interesting journal project and product. So we're going to be talking with her here in just a bit. It looks like we lost her for a second, but we'll get her right back. But I think that is really interesting as we think about goal setting, that's very important to write them down and capture them and do all of those things. Kim, are you a journaler? Do you ever journal?
No, but my sister is a real blogger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that matters. I think there's power in like setting your goal out into the world and declaring it. I think that matters, and I think it helps us get there when we can see it very clearly. But let's talk to our new friend, Dr. Stacia Pierce, about that. Hi, Dr. Pierce. Welcome to the program.
Hello, how are you doing?
Great. Thanks for joining us today. I appreciate you taking the time. So people know you as a life coach, and you are the winner of the 2010 Own Oprah Network contest, and you have created the Success Journal, which I think is so very interesting because I think there is a lot of power in the business world and personally when we kind of set our goal, when we really declare it and put it out there and get very, very clear about it. And tell us about the process that your journal system takes people through.
Well, my journal system, what I love about it is that it gives you a format. So what people usually say is that the biggest problem they have is they say, I have this book, this empty book, but what do I put in it? And I don't know how to journalize. So I give these prompts that ask you questions like, what are your goals for the year? What are your 101 goals? And they fill in the blank. And then the next prompt asks you to visualize it and then kind of put some pictures to it. So there's a place for, it's called your vision board right in the journal, where you put the vision of what those goals look like. And that really helps people to crystallize the journal experience and to really feel like, okay, I'm getting a hold of how to journalize, how to get a hold of my goals and what my journal can really do for me.
So I think I heard you just say 101 goals. That's a lot. I feel
yes.
Like maybe I'm a slacker. I don't know if I have 101 goals right now. Is that the number I should be aiming for?
Oh, my goodness. When I first started, I couldn't think of 4 goals. But I tell you what, if you just sit down, you don't have to do it all in one setting or all at one time, but the more goals you have, then the bigger your life becomes. And I look at them as like a roadmap. So I tell people when they write these goals down, now you're starting to map out the direction you want your life to go in. You know, they could be goals in different areas. You can categorize them for your family, for your business, for your household, for yourself, for your health. And I think when you look at it in the big scope of your whole life, then, oh, my goodness, it makes it so much easier to think of 101 goals.
Okay, I'm going to try it. Challenge accepted. I'll let you know on social media.
All right.
So
let me know.
I will. So we've talked about the method a little bit, but this has been kind of a lifelong process for you coming up with both your coaching practice and this particular journal in terms of how you have set goals throughout your life. It sounds like even from a very young age.
Yeah, the whole journal concept really came up. I started when I was 13 journalizing, and then I didn't have any problems. I just was journalizing about life and, you know, teenage stuff. And I started my own business when I was 13. My father put all of his kids in business at the age of 13. So my journal became like my guide to what to do in business and what to do next. But I tell you when it really became therapy for me was when I was 21 years old and I got married. And before I was 22, I was going through a divorce. And it was like a devastating time in my life. I was pregnant with my child, and, you know, my husband's like, comes home and says, hey, I'm leaving. I don't want this relationship or a child. So at that point, my journal became therapy, and I started using it to work through life problems and challenges. And so one day I was sitting there writing in my journal, and I was like 6 months into this thing, and I said, why do I keep having all these negative experiences? Why am I just getting all these negative results? This is when I'm writing the question in my journal. And the answer comes back to me. I intuitively feel like I'm hearing this answer, and I hear, well, you keep asking negative questions, and so you're going to get negative answers. Change your focus. So that's where the prompt of the success journal came from. And I said, okay, well, I need to get some success out of this situation. So let me ask more questions about what to do with my life and my purpose. And I started asking those kind of questions, and it changed my life and put me on the right path, got me out of that sticky spot, got me to go on with life, to get out of that just what was me kind of attitude. And I really pulled myself out of the depths of just despair and started a new business, and the rest was history. And so from that point on, journaling has been my anchor. And then I teach my clients and other people how to use their journal as a transformation book, whether it's for their business, whether it's for relationships, whether it's for friends, or trying to figure out problems. But what goes into your journal, I tell them that when they write down the problems, that always sit there and wait for a solution, but don't make your journal just a dumping pot. Also make it a place where you go for ideas and strategies, and you start recording what you want your life to look like.
I love that. I love the idea of not using your journal as a complaint log, which I think a lot of people do. I think a lot of people do that. And I really like that advice too, to listen. I think in a world right now where we're so inundated and with, you know, we're all so connected to our devices, and every little ding and bell is, you know, the promise of another little hit of dopamine in our brains, and we're kind of bombarded with so much stuff. I think the value of listening to your, you know, listening to your gut is really powerful, and that's an expression we use a lot, but I don't think a lot of people are really doing it. So I think that's really important advice. And so beyond just the scope of the journal, if you could tell us a bit about your approach and strategy as a life coach, as you're working with people to change the course of their lives and careers a bit?
Well, the journal prompt my whole coaching program. So as a life coach, I have over 100 clients I'm working with right now. And when they come to me, there's a problem we're usually starting with that we want to resolve. Most of my clients are entrepreneurs or home-based business women. I have like 30% men that I coach. But my process is, first of all, the write things down. I always say what's written is real. And I tell them that when you write things down, it gives you space to begin to figure out the problem and come up with a solution. And so we get the first assignment is to, hey, write something down in your journal. Then after that, then we go on and create systems and formats and formulas to get them out of the situation. And so that's one part of it. I'm a very systematic person. And so when I'm coaching someone, I love to give them a system. I feel like people, if they had their own system, then they could do it on their own. They don't need a coach.
Right.
So what a coach does is a coach can give you a system, an answer, something that you can take and say, let me paint this by number. Let me play by play. I can take this piece of paper and follow these instructions that can help me out. And I mean, I know every instruction to your whole life, but I can at least give you a beginning, the path to start on. And then from there, they pick up the pieces and start working through things. And so that's my basis of my formula. That's the type of coaching that I do. And then I have tons of already put together answers and programs and things that I plug them into. So things that have already been tried and true that we've worked in our business and thousands of other businesses, and they have worked. And so what happens is they say, okay, I can cut through the chase, through all trying to find this research and find all these resources. And I have a person that I'm coaching with that has a resource manual, and they just kind of give me those answers, and I can get to the destination quicker.
That's excellent. Everybody needs some clarity in their lives, I think. Everybody could benefit from that. All right. Well, everybody, head to LifeCoach2. That's the number 2, LifeCoachToWomen.com, if you would like to connect with Dr. Stacia Pierce or read more about her new success journal, which you can also order on Amazon. Dr. Pierce, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, my friends, we're going to take a quick break and then turn you back over to Bill and Wendy here in just a bit on 720 WGN.